Good morning. It is good having you at the Central Church of the Nazarene. I am glad to be, and we have good news. The princes have good news. We are finally going to get in the house after 4 months. So we're excited about that. This is a kind of a weird day because in the first service, you know, we've been staying. Some people from Central allowed us to stay in their condo while they were in southern Arkansas all winter. And they came back this weekend. And so we were just, we were blessed. They were in the first service, and I was very, very thankful for them. What a great gift. They gave us 4 months where we could look around and be with them. So that was in the first service. And in this service, the lady whose house we're buying, Pat, is here. And Pat, thanks for letting us buy your house. We didn't want to be homeless. I didn't know how we were going to sleep in our car. So thank you, thank you. We're in a sermon series called Objects from the Hill. And each week when you come in here, you get a little object, something that would have been found on the hill, the place where Jesus died. The place called Golgotha, the place of the skull, the place of the executioner's tail, where Jesus went and was hanged between two thieves. And the first week you were here, you got a little scroll, and that was to signify the sign that was placed on the cross by Pontius Pilate, the sign that was written in three languages, Aramaic, Latin, and Greek, the sign that said, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And we looked at that sign, and we said, God will use anything, a sign on a cross, that God will use anybody, Pontius Pilate, Roman pagan governor Pontius Pilate, and God will speak any language to communicate to you his great love for you. God is not mad at you. God is mad about you. That was week one. Last week, you were given a nail, and the nail represents, we all know, Jesus was nailed to the cross, and we talked about Jesus, and we talked how he was very God and very man. As very man, that meant that he suffered. He understood all the pains, all the disappointments, all the struggles, all the issues that we have to struggle and face every day of our lives. Jesus knew that very man. But we also said that Jesus was very God. Paul in the book of Colossians said it this way, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him. Jesus was fully God. And as such, we talked, even though we gave you nails last week, we talked about how it wasn't nails that kept Jesus on the cross. Rather, it was his great love that kept him on the cross. He could have called 10,000 angels, but he stayed on the cross and he bore the sins and he bore the struggles for our salvation. Last week, if you were here, it was a powerful service when people came forward and we talked about nailing our sins and nailing our struggles or our sickness or our worries up to the cross. And you may have been one of these that put your issue on the cross last week. What a great time as people were pounding their stuff on the cross. And if you did, I want you to know it's still there. If you know exactly where you put it, it's still there. And I encourage you last week to leave it there. Don't take it back. Leave your issues, leave your junk, leave your garbage right there at the cross. Well, today when you came in, you were given a thorn. Well, you were given a little envelope that inside has a thorn, and on the outside it says, caution, this is sharp or something. As if we didn't know that thorns are sharp. It's kind of like McDonald's coffee, caution, this is hot. Well, I hope it is. You know, we know thorns are sharp. If you've been poked by a thorn before, if you've stepped on a thorn, if you've had, you know thorns are trouble. We all know that. And the Bible tells us, three of the four Gospels, Luke is the only exception, tells us that on Jesus' head, the Roman soldiers fashioned a crown of thorns to go on his head. We all know thorns were placed there. Those thorns on Jesus' head, fashioned by those soldiers, was meant for one thing. Turn to Matthew chapter 27, if that's where we're going to end up. I think Matthew gives us a unique perspective on the crown of thorns. I suppose there are a lot of folks that were glad that Jesus was being executed between those two thieves on that Friday afternoon. The Pharisees, they never liked Jesus. They were convinced that he was a blasphemer. They didn't like the fact that he hung out with tax collectors and sinners. They didn't like the fact that he healed people on the Sabbath. They didn't like the fact that he allowed a woman of questionable character to come and wash his feet with her hair. They didn't like a lot of things about Jesus. They were glad he was done for. And I suppose old King Herod, he was glad that Jesus was being executed as well. Herod, if you know your ancient history, was a very unstable king. And probably any threat, even from Jesus, who never raised a weapon at all towards him. But even any threat would have caused Herod to get all excited, and so he was probably glad that Jesus was on the cross. Pontius Pilate, he probably thought that he had washed his hands. Probably the man was innocent. Probably he didn't do whatever they're accusing him of doing, but who cares? It's one man. I'm going to wash my hands of the whole thing. Probably even Pilate didn't care so much. And I guess on a certain level, we can understand why Pilate and Herod and the Pharisees were glad that Jesus was being executed. But the one part of this crucifixion story that I don't always get is the Roman soldiers. Now, the Roman soldiers had two jobs. Beat Jesus, crucify Jesus. That's it. They, no doubt, if they'd been a Roman soldier for very long at all, they had done this dozens, if not hundreds of times. Crucifixion was the favorite mode of execution by the Romans. It was a way to humiliate and to kill those people who stood against them. And it was a way to signify to everybody else, to intimidate everybody else in the community, this is what happens to people that go against Rome. This is what you get if you dare to defy the authority of Rome. You get beaten to a pulp and hung on a tree. That's what happens to you. And no doubt these Roman soldiers had done this, you know, dozens, 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 hundreds of times possibly. There was crosses lying in that area all the time. And so they knew what to do. You beat a guy to an inch within his life, then you hang him on a cross and you wait for him to die. That's it, two jobs. But these guys did three. And Matthew tells us what else they did in Matthew 27, beginning with verse 27. It says, then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him, probably 100 soldiers. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. And they twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. And they put a staff in his right hand. And then they knelt in front of him and mocked him. Hail, King of the Jews, they said. And they spit on him. And they took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. Remember, they struck his head after they had put the crown of thorns on his head. And after they mocked him, they took off the robe and put on his own clothes on him. And then they led him away to crucify him. So in between their required duties of beating Jesus and then crucifying Jesus, the soldiers took it upon themselves to mock Jesus. It wasn't part of their job description. You understand that. That wasn't a required task. Spitting on Jesus wasn't going to aid in his death. Putting a crown of thorns on his head wasn't going to kill him any quicker. That wasn't what the purpose was, and yet they did it. I suppose the crown of thorns made the soldiers feel like they were in charge, that they had the power, that they were the strong ones as far as they knew. Maybe there was a group thing going on here. We've seen mob mentality before. Maybe that's what takes place. And you turn on the news sometimes and a mob takes over and crazy things happen. And it, you know, we've seen that occur. Maybe that's what's happening here. Or maybe they were just so calloused and they devalued human life so much that it didn't matter to them. Oh, he's going to be dead in a little while anyway. Let's just do what we want to do. Quite honestly, I think it's very difficult to get into the mindset of a first century Roman soldier. You know, we're so far removed in the 21st century, it's hard to know exactly what was going on in their minds and why they did what they did. But I don't think that's Matthew's point anyway. Matthew's point that he was saying was not trying to say, well, you know, don't be like the Roman soldiers. Don't beat people because that's bad. Of course that's true. Of course we know that. But that's not his point. Don't spit on people because that's kind of gross. Of course we know that's true. But I don't think that's his point. To really understand Matthew's mindset, I think we need to understand Matthew, the guy writing it, and we need to understand the people that he's writing to in the very first century. Matthew, if you remember your Bible, will know that at one time he was a tax collector. Tax collectors were probably the most hated people in the first century. Everyone hated tax collectors. Why? It wasn't like, you know, as we get closer to April 15th, there'll be a lot of, you know, IRS jokes and all the rest. Everybody, you know, everyone, I hate paying taxes, grumble, 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 you know. And that's just part of who we are as Americans, I think. It wasn't the same thing. First century, the tax collectors were viewed as being collaborators with the enemy. They were in cahoots with the Romans. They could charge exorbitant amounts. They could charge whatever they wanted to charge, just as long as Rome got their money. And so in many ways, they were kind of like the mob. They'd shake down those people who could least afford it. They would pick on the lowest realm of society in order to get money to line their pockets. Rome didn't care how they got the money. Rome didn't care how much money they got, just as long as Rome got their money, got their cut. And so it wasn't like today. You know, the people who work for the IRS, they're good, hardworking people. No one would have said that about a tax collector. No one would have said, maybe they're hardworking, but no one would have said they were good, ever. Tax collectors were hated. But there's more to it than that. Matthew was not just a tax collector. Remember, well, to really understand, you need to look at Luke's gospel and Mark's gospel, because when Luke and Mark are telling about the calling of Matthew when Jesus came to Matthew's tax collector's booth, Mark and Luke don't refer to him as Matthew. They refer to him by his given name, which is Levi. Well, big deal. What is it? Levi, Matthew, Matthew, Levi, who cares? You know, some people call me Rob. Some people call me Pastor Rob. My boys call me Dad. Carla calls me Hubba 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 He-Man or something. Well, I'd like her to. But, you know, people, you know, what's in a name? Who cares about it? In the first century, a name was really important. You didn't just give a name because you like the way it sounds or like the way it rings or fits with your last name or whatever. When we were naming Alex, oh, my land, we could not agree on a name for Alex. In fact, Carla wanted to name Alex Austin. And I said, I am not naming my son after the town where the Texas Longhorns play football. That is not. Now, if we were going to have a daughter, we could have named her Ann Arbor, and I would have been okay with that. You know, that'd have been a perfect name. Come here, little Ann. But we didn't. We had a boy. What do you name a boy? We couldn't agree on the name. There were some complications when Alex was born, and so we were in the hospital for 5 days. And on the fifth day, the nurse came in the room and said, you have to name this child. For 5 days, they've been calling him, you know, Prince Boy or whatever. I don't know what they're calling him. So we finally, you know, we said, all right, Alex. And it stuck, and he's all happy with Alex, and we are too. But it wasn't like that in the first century. You didn't just name a kid whatever you wanted to name a kid. Names meant something. And Levi, if you know your Bible, you know that Levites, that was a tribe of Israel. Levite is a very biblical Old Testament name. Levi was the third son of Jacob. Leah was his mother. The tribe of Levite were the priestly tribe. That meant, as a Levite, that meant that you weren't just, you know, called into ministry, you know. You didn't just come down, bump your head on the altar, and get all teary-eyed and say, Jesus wants me to be a preacher. That wasn't it. You were born into ministry. If you were a Levite, you were born into that. And as a Levite, that meant that the men, it was always the men, never women, it was the men who would, you know, maybe conduct the music. That was what the Levites did. Or as the men that talked about the rituals. Or as the men that over, the Levite men that oversaw the sacrifices. Or as the Levites that conducted all the temple worship and practices. And so for Matthew, his name was Levi. No doubt that's what his parents thought. This is his track. This is our boy. We're part of the Levites. He's gonna be in the temple. And one day maybe he'll be leading worship. Or maybe he'll be opening up God's word. Or maybe he'll be conducting the sacrifice. That's where our boy's headed. He's going to be in the temple. But we know that's not what happened. In fact, Matthew, instead of working in the temple, had the worst possible job a parent could have hoped for their daughter. A tax collector. He was in cahoots with the enemy. He was shaking down his neighbors. When they got together with their friends and their friends were saying about how their kids were maybe farmers or maybe their kids was a shopkeeper or a carpenter, and they'd say, hey, Alpheus, we know his name was Alpheus because Mark tells us. Hey, Alpheus, what's your boy? What's Levi doing these days? Is he working in the temple? I haven't seen him. You think they would have loved to answer that question? No, they try to change the subject as quick as they could. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to think about the conversation that would have taken place between Alpheus and Levi. When Alpheus, the dad, goes to Levi, his son, saying, Levi, if that's what you want to do, if you want to be a tax collector, you want to be a collaborator with the enemy, if you want to be a Benedict Arnold, you go ahead and do it, but you can forget about us. We're not going to have a son of ours shaking down our neighbors, people we care about. We're not going to have a son of ours being with the enemy. You're done as far as we're concerned. I've known parents who've said that over much lesser things to their kids. So that was Levi, Matthew. Did he have any regrets? Did he, sitting at his tax collector booth, he said, boy, I made some poor choices. I wish I could go back and do things over. Maybe if I would have made that choice, or maybe if I wouldn't have gone to that place, things would have been different in my life. I can imagine him saying that. Why do I think he said that? Well, I have regrets, and so do you. We all have regrets. But there he was, sitting at his tax collector booth, when a guy named Jesus came walking by. And Jesus looked at him, and according to Mark, son of Alpheus, looked at him and said, Matthew, follow me. Not Matthew, you dirty, rotten, stinking tax collector. Not Matthew, quit what you're doing and then follow me. Not Matthew, get your life straightened out. Not Matthew, I know you had Levitical training, so read to me a chapter of Leviticus and then maybe I'll see if you can follow me. No, it was simply Matthew, follow me, and instantly became the greatest day in Matthew's life. He left the tax collector's booth. He started following Jesus and everything changed for him in a way. everything changed for him and that people stopped hating him because he was a tax collector. But later, when he's writing this book, 20 years after Jesus was crucified on a cross, writing to people, Jewish Christians in the first century, Jewish Christians in the first century are probably the most hated group of Christians ever. Everyone hated them. Jews hated them. They just killed Jesus. Remember? Romans hated them. They thought that they were some kind of collaborators with, you know, everybody hated Jewish Christians in the first century. And so Matthew went from being this hated tax collector to writing to fellow Jewish Christians who now everyone hates them. And most Bible scholars, almost all Bible scholars, think that Matthew was writing to Jewish Christians. They think that because, well, for one, Matthew quotes more Old Testament passages than any other. And Matthew, when he's talking about the genealogy of Jesus, he takes the genealogy all the way back to Abraham. Only a Jew would have cared about that. And he refers to Jesus as the long-awaited Messiah. Only a Jew would have referred to him that way. And there were, when he talks about the religious festivals, he just writes like the audience already knows what he's talking about. So Matthew, Levi, writing to these Jewish Christians, hated Jewish Christians, first century. Matthew, Levi, the guy who was the tax collector, whose family disowned him and now is following Jesus, is writing to these group of Christians who were persecuted beyond belief. When you became a Christian in the first century, it was problems. It wasn't like, you know, we had a membership class a couple weeks ago, and we said, you know, you want to be a Nazarene? And they said, yeah, and we brought them up here and shook their hands. First century, they called new believers. Some people called new believers Nazarenes in the first century. They were following after Jesus, the Nazarene. So that was kind of a common term, you were a Nazarene. But it was not an endearing term. Remember, what good can come out of Nazareth? Nothing. It was kind of a derogatory term. They were equating themselves with Nazareth. Who would equate themselves with Nazareth? And so these first early Christians, it was hard. You said become a Christian and die. That's not a great sales campaign. Become a Christian and maybe you'll get strung up just like they hung Jesus. Become a Christian, maybe you'll get stoned. Become a Christian, you'll be an outcast. Become a Christian, that's you. We're going to be persecuted. And so Matthew's writing to these people and telling them the story of Jesus. And if he gets to this part, he's saying, you know what? In the story of Jesus, there's something you need to know. There's something you really got to get. Those Roman soldiers, they had two jobs to do. Beat Jesus, crucify Jesus. But they did a third thing. They mocked Jesus. They spit on Jesus. They put a crown of thorns on his head. Listen, those things, those aren't meant to hurt a person physically. Mocking doesn't hurt a person physically. Now, you can't hock a loogie powerful enough to break a bone, you know. A thorn's not going to kill you. You know, you can take it out and poke your neighbor. He probably won't be happy. You know, you can take that out and it might get an infection, I suppose. But it's not meant to kill a person. What is it meant to do? It's meant to break their spirit. It's meant to break their will. It's meant to put them in their place. That's what the Roman soldiers were hoping to do. And so it's Matthew, this former tax collector, this former, you know, good kid gone bad, this former guy that everyone hated, this one that Jesus came up to him and said, you can still follow me. He's writing to these Christians who are also being persecuted and also going through struggles and also dealing with life. And he's saying, listen, fellas, here's what you got to know. Jesus was persecuted too. And they tried to crush Jesus too. And they tried to break his will too. But I want you to know they couldn't do it. They were successful in beating Jesus. They were successful in crucifying Jesus. But they were not successful in crushing Jesus. He did not go to the cross as a whipped dog. He went to the cross as a victorious Savior. When he said and prayed from the cross, into your hands I commend my spirit, that was not the cry of a defeated man. That was a cry of a completed life. When he said, it is finished, that was not the hands up and saying, I'm done. That was saying, my job here has been accomplished and the sins of the world are taken care of and it is finished. I did what the Father wanted me to do. And so he's telling these believers, just hang in there. You be like Jesus. And when they throw junk at you, when life comes at you, just be like Jesus. Be strong like Jesus. That's the point. And that's a good lesson for us. You know, I gave you the thorns because this whole world, it's thorny. You know when thorns came on the earth, you remember that. I remember it's in Genesis chapter 3. When God is speaking to Adam after they sinned, after Adam and Eve sinned, God goes to Adam and says, since you listened to your wife and ate from the tree whose fruit I commanded you not to eat, the ground is cursed because of you. And all your life, you will struggle to scratch a living from it. It will grow thorns and thistles for you. So thorns are the fruit of sinfulness. Thorns represent sin. They place this crown of thorns on Jesus' head. They placed all the sin on Jesus' head. This old world is thorny. This old world causes trouble. We shouldn't be surprised that sometimes it's a struggle. And sometimes the struggle is because of the things that we've done. Matthew was hated initially because he was a tax collector. He was shaking down people. His struggles initially, he was hated initially because of the things he was doing. Sometimes some of our struggles are because of what you've done. You know, if you choose to turn your back on God and choose to do things your own way and choose to be self-centered, don't be surprised if you have struggles in life. Sometimes they're because of the things we've done. But after Matthew became a Christian, after Jesus said, follow me, he still had struggles. They were part of the most persecuted group in the history of mankind. That was nothing he's did on himself. That was just because this old world is thorny. And there's a sin problem in this world. And sin causes trouble. And sin causes heartache. And sin causes problems. Sometimes even to good people. Sometimes good people face terrible things. Sometimes good people, you know, again, you get tired of these shameless plugs. Sometimes good people have chronic pain. Sometimes they struggle with life. Sometimes death enters into our family and we don't have any answers. Sometimes it happens. But do you remember Jesus' words? Some of the most powerful words in all the Bible is found in John chapter 16, verse 33. In this world you will have troubles. Not you might, not you could, not maybe, not if you're really unlucky. In this world you will have trouble. But I love the next verse. But take heart, exclamation point. But take heart, but hold on. But don't throw in the towel, but don't give up. I have overcome the world. What's that mean? It means life can throw junk at you. Sometimes it's because of you. Sometimes it's not. But sometimes life gets hard and it's a struggle. But take heart. Jesus said, I've overcome the world. Sometimes those thorns come and they jab you and it hurts and you want to cry out. Sometimes you think, who is listening? Is there anybody out there that cares? Jesus is saying, take heart. Don't throw in the towel. I'm with you. Take heart. I've overcome the world. It's so easy to get caught up in all the junk, whether that's stuff in our life, whether it's the problems and the issues. It's so easy to get focused on those hang-ups or those habits or the stuff. It's so easy to hammer something on the cross and take it back in the middle of the week. I am sure there are some things that were hammered on this cross last Sunday. And some of you have taken it back this week, maybe Sunday afternoon. You said, I'm going to hang on here, anger. And you pounded in, and then something happened, and kaboom. Or you put on there, I'm going to put on pornography, and then this week, kaboom. Or you put on there, I'm going to put on here some other issue, and then this week, kaboom. In this world, you'll have trouble. But take heart. I've overcome the world. That means keep going back to Jesus. In this world, there'll be thorns, but take heart. I've overcome the world. But take heart. I've overcome the world. There's a great passage in Isaiah the prophet. We usually read it this time of year, and so now is a great time to read it. It said, he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering, familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain, bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for Rob Prince's transgressions. He was pierced for Josh Kennedy's transgressions. He was pierced for our transgressions and crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And then I love this part. by his wounds, we are healed. What that means is, this world can have trouble, and we can get wrapped up in it. We can see stuff that happens in a courtroom, and we could see stuff that happens in a classroom, or we can see stuff that happens in Congress, and we can say, oh my land, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? But I want you to know that God is still on the throne, and Jesus Christ is still the victor, and he still has a plan for transforming this old world, and he still calls us to pray and to call out to him and say, your kingdom come in Flint, your kingdom come in Lansing, your kingdom come in Washington, your kingdom come in Moscow, your kingdom come in Ukraine, your kingdom come like it is in heaven, your kingdom come in my home as it is in heaven. Your kingdom come over my issue as it is in heaven. That's what this is all about. In this world, you'll have trouble. In this world, there are dirty, rotten, stinking, painful thorns. But take heart. I have overcome the world, said Jesus. We're going to sing this old hymn. My Jesus, I love you. I know you are mine. And as we sing it, you can respond in a number of different ways. If you're just being overwhelmed with life and you need a place to pray, you can come down here and pray. If stuff is going on, last Sunday we had these papers. I left these papers up here and some nails. In the first service, some folks came up and they pounded a few more things in. If you weren't here last week, or if you didn't come last week, or if you've got a new issue that you want to pound to the cross, you can do that too. Yesterday there was a funeral service in here, and there was a mixed crowd. You know, guys and gals, some of them haven't been in church in a long time. And Pastor Steve preached the sermon, did a great job. And he opened it up at the end of a funeral service for people to come down and put their stuff on the cross, just like we did last Sunday. And you'll notice there's one way up there. That was put there by a guy. I found out this morning he's 7 feet 1 inches tall. Big old biker guy, biker vest, came up there. Bam, bam, bam. Listen, the point is, you don't have to bear your burdens. That's why Jesus went to the cross. There's problems, there is issues, there are thorns in this world, but don't hold on to them. Give them to Jesus.